You are listening to the Fire You Carry podcast with your hosts, Kevin Welsh, and myself, Noel Lilly. We have a call to action at the end of this episode. We need your help. So make sure you listen all the way to the end to hear that. Thank you for being with us. Enjoy.
We are back with the Fire You Carry with yours truly, Kevin Welsh.
And Noel Lilly. Oh, sorry.
You got some sort of like cowboy hat going on back there. What do we got going?
Oh, you spotted the cowboy hat. Hold on. The listener can't see this, but
no. Where is it? What is that? Yeah.
So when I was a kid, my brother-in-law now, but he was just a friend at the time, Nathan Weimay, who's currently in the Navy out in Japan. We've talked about him. He had a cowboy hat like this, a little straw cowboy hat, and he put a bunch of skateboarding stickers on the straw cowboy hat because we were skateboarders back then. And I thought it was super cool, so I copied him. So I got my Zero stickers, my America stickers, SBI Board Shop, for those of you that know.
Solid.
Osiris Shoes, Black Label. All kinds of really cool stickers on a cowboy hat. So
I like it.
It's my teenager hat.
While we're talking about this is super random, but we had a booth at the Chaplain's Firefighters Breakfast, which is pretty rad. And it's just an amazing group of guys. Chaplains from all over the Southern California area came together, and they had a guest speaker from Northern Ireland, which was awesome.
He was awesome.
What kind of blew me away, and this always does, is who listens to this podcast, because Deanie Lungu, I want to shout out. She is a estate attorney, trust, does wills, and she did our trust for our family. And she was sitting there, she came up to the booth and she said, "Hey, I listened to your podcast." And, you know, and I just was so floored by that. She's a prominent attorney. She did really cool stuff, but it's always interesting to see who learns. So, and I was saying my own personal experience, get a will, get a trust, get something going, because you never know what could happen. And all the kids, all the thing, it's a huge weight off our shoulders when we got that done.
Yeah, it's super humbling whenever you meet somebody like that, that is listening to the show. And I always love hearing that. We will absolutely link to her. What is it called? Is it a company? Is it a company?
Yeah, Lungu Law. And she's in Straight Streams for any of the county guys. But she's out in Long Beach. And you know what? I'll put a link to it at the end of it. I don't know exact contact info.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes for sure. But that was a cool event. It was very cool to meet. We meet a lot of the different chaplains and guys we met from other places. Of course, our good friend Jeremy Stalnecker was there with his Mighty Oaks stuff. So that was fun. And yeah, it was cool. We saw Charlie Brown there of Next Wrong. It was a good event. Very cool.
Great guys. And I'll have to say this too, real quick, is that we're in the midst of a 30-day challenge that I am failing miserably at. It's the lunges. But Cody Gilbert, dude, is killing it out there. And he's, I don't know what day he's on, but I know he's been stringing them together. Now he's got to be in his late 20s. We're pretty much wrapping this up, and he has been crushing it. So Cody, you're a savage, dude. Strong work.
Strong work, Cody. This one has been fun for me. Heather jumped on board, and during the ramp up week, she was like, "Yeah, I think I'll probably get to like 150, maybe 200 by the end of the month." And I just kept saying, "No, I think you're going to do 400s. And then sure enough, by the end of the first week, she was doing 400s. So she's been doing it. And I've been home a lot of days. I haven't been working a lot lately. So we've been doing them together on the road by our house, which has been very cool. And a lot of her family members are actually doing it too. They're doing scaled versions. So they're not doing the 400, which is still totally awesome. Any lunges are good lunges. So her aunt's been doing them. Her mom's been doing them. Her little, I guess he would be her nephew, Easton, has been involved. So it's been pretty cool. There's been a lot of people in the family that are out there doing it. And I know there's others of you in the podcast that are doing it quietly and not telling us about it. And we love you too.
Growing them tree trunks, dude. I love it. So we were talking offline about some motivation, some marital power struggles. Nobody's ever felt those, have they?
It's a pretty rare occurrence, but I have experience. Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting in the, let's say, the first responder military world, you know, that when you're at work, we always preach leadership and you take control and you take action quite a bit. And what's interesting is that not always works when you come home, right? And if you've been on the job for a little while, at least for me, at first, when my wife was very like, oh my gosh, you've been gone for 3 days. It was hard for her to adjust to the life of us being gone. And then now a few years into it, I think she really likes the time apart. You know what I mean? Because she can kind of have her own program. She does her own thing. And the honest truth is that she runs the show when I'm gone, right? And but when I come home, there is a little bit of a power struggle because, hey, how come we're doing this? How can we do that? Why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? And I think I try to control, take the power back. And there's a struggle there because she was like, dude, we were fine for 4 days without you. You know? So, and you come in trying to like blaze up here, like calm down, bro. So it's a very interesting dynamic of like, you know, we've talked about like our buddy Jason Teeter says, sometimes you just got to pull over before you get to work, do some Wim Hof breathing, literally turn your hat around backwards and know that you're switching roles and you're a father. And how can you can support the role when you go in?
Definitely something I identify with, especially when you're doing multiple days in a row, multiple shifts in a row. You come home and it's hard to adjust sometimes. And the thing that I do is exactly like what you're talking about, where I'll just start executing tasks that I see needing to get done. Because at work, that's what we do. So we show up at work in the morning and I know that I have to clean all the bathrooms and I have to vacuum all the floors and I have to mop the floors that I can't vacuum and I got to check out, you know, this is a list of things. So you just start knocking them out. And I come home and I just kind of fall into that same pattern of like, oh, there's dishes to be done. Oh, I got to make breakfast. Oh, now I'm going to clean this. Now I'm going to bring firewood in. You know, like then I could fill my whole day with tasks. But then what am I doing? Who am I to the family at that point? I'm just a chore guy, right? I'm just this guy that comes in and does chores. And that's not dad. That's not husband. Is it useful? Is it helpful sometimes? Yeah. Are those bad things? No. But should they be the things we jump on immediately? And should they be our first priority to the point where we're distracted from the family, from the wife and the kids? And I would say a strong no. You can't allow those things to become that.
And it's the way that we do it too, right? Because I think we've been conditioned at work. When we go clean those toilets, we're banging this stuff out. We're waiting for the next call. There's another task to be done afterwards. We're getting it done and we're kind of in like a hurry up offense or kind of in a hurry up mode, right? And so if I do that at work, my wife's like, what is wrong with you? You're like running up and down. What are you doing? But I'm like, I'm in work mode, right? And so like, it's even the way we do it. It's like, maybe I just have to slow down. And I think she takes offense to it too. Are you saying I didn't clean the toilets when you weren't gone, you know? And so I think I have to be a little bit more sensitive to just the routine and saying, what are you doing? How can I help?
I have a half formed kind of concept and thought on this. And we talked about it a little bit before we hit record, like we always do. And I'm kind of looking at this right now as I'm thinking through it as your motivations versus your duty. And so how I'm thinking about it is your duty, your commitments, your calling, your obligations, those are the type of things like cleaning the toilets at work or going to pick up that homeless guy that's needed help 700 times in the last 2 years. You're going to do that because it's your duty. It's your job. It's your calling. You're obligated to do it. So you're going to go do that thing. And your motivation behind that is less important because it's just what you're called to do. It's just what you have to do. You may not want to do that in that moment. And I can tell you right now, at work, for example, there has never been a single day at work where I want to clean the toilets. I don't want to do that. It's not my favorite thing. I don't enjoy it at all, but I'm going to go do it. And so my attitude in that, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but I kind of feel like it really doesn't matter. You get the task done. Now, I will say if you translate that over into picking up the homeless guy that needs help, your attitude there does matter because you have to treat that man like the human being that he is, and you have to care for him at that level like you always would, but you're still doing that out of a sense of duty and obligation. Now, if I come home and I am doing the dishes, feeding our son Indy, doing whatever, well, my motivation is just to check a box or, you know, in the case where I come home and I feel like, why are there dishes in the sink? I got to take care of this. And so my motivation is more of a, oh, why isn't this done? Or worst case scenario for me and something that I do get stuck in a lot, and this is something that I've been recently dealing with at home, so this is real. I'm avoiding other things by doing tasks that are good and need to be done, but my motivation is avoidance of maybe a conversation that I don't want to have, or I'm tired, I'm stressed out about stuff going on, and so I don't feel emotionally ready to engage with the kids and the wife. And so instead I just go straight and pour myself into dishes or splitting firewood.
Is that conscious at the time? Are you aware of that? Or is that something that you reflect back on?
I'm not usually conscious of it in the moment.
Right.
But I do at some point, and a lot of times it takes my wife, Heather, talking to me about it, bringing it up and, you know, saying, hey, what are you doing? That's the kid's chore. You know, let them do that. You don't need to be doing that right now. And then we have a conversation and I'll kind of realize sometimes, not all the time, sometimes it takes me longer than others, but sometimes in that moment I realize, oh, hold on. I'm not doing this from a place of love and service. I'm doing this from a place of avoidance or whatever else. And so in that case, I think the motivation really matters.
Yeah. For me, that's really interesting you say that. I don't think I really consciously thought of that, but I definitely do that as an action. I think when the girls are melting down and everybody's fried and there's a lot of emotion, I'll tend to gravitate towards the garage and I start shuffling things in the garage or, oh, it's a good time to hang on the bar. I haven't worked on my grip strength in a while, you know, instead of diving in and tackling the immediate thing. And I think my thought is that, you know, hey, I want them to work out their stuff. I can't rescue them from everything between sibling fights and stuff like that. But at the same time, I do think there's avoidance there for sure. I'm probably checking out because I'm this is too much.
And I think that goes right back to the first responders aspect of this, like you're talking about where they run the house and we're not there. I think a lot of times in our house, there'll be a need from the children, disciplinary or just, you know, teaching, talking, whatever, correcting. And Heather will instinctively just immediately begin to do that because that's what she does all day, every day when I'm not there. And then for me as a dad, a lot of times this is conscious and I know this, and this is something I've continued to work on and I'm still struggling with. But a lot of times for me as a dad, I'll realize I should speak into this. I should be a part of this, especially if there's discipline involved or correction. You know, I need to be dad. I'm here today. But a lot of times my default is, you know what? She's handling that and she's handling it well. And so I'm just going to let that happen and I don't have to be a part of it. And that's not appropriate because we're a team. We're a husband and wife and we both have roles of discipline and correction. And, you know, there's that back and forth and that. But if I'm just standing on the sidelines because she's handling, then my kids are missing out on that role, that dual role that we have where I'm dad and she's mom and we handle things differently. And, you know, there's that different, you know, it's just the way that a marriage is supposed to work where we're both there and we're both speaking into it.
Yeah. Then you become that Disneyland dad where all you do is the fun stuff.
Right.
You come home and you're like, hey, let's go on hikes. Let's go over here. Let's go get an ice cream. Well, you're not doing the hard stuff and you're deferring that to your wife. I think we're failing in that teamwork aspect of it, where we should be absolutely involved in helping them, you know, maintain the peace of the house or discipline or whatever it is.
Right. And this goes back to a previous conversation that we've had, back to the idol of comfort, because in that moment, I think you're right in that place. I'm right in that place where, you know, it's uncomfortable to have those conversations with your kids. It's uncomfortable to correct and have to discipline. We don't want to have to do that stuff. And sometimes we just don't, but we know we need to. And I'll tell you from personal experience, when your kids are teenagers and getting ready to be out of the house, that stuff gets more difficult. You know, the level of things that they're dealing with, it gets amplified. I mean, we remember you, the podcast listener, you remember being a kid, being a teenager, things get more serious, more intense. And so those conversations get not only more difficult to have, but they get more impactful and more important. Let me read a couple of verses that I wrote down when I was thinking about this before. And this goes back to my point about where your motivations are when you're doing things. So this one is Proverbs 21, verse 2. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart. And I can very easily justify my actions when I'm at home knocking out tasks. These are good things. I got to get this stuff done. This needs to be done. I'm just helping. But if my heart's not in the right place, if I'm not really doing it from a place of love and I'm just kind of trying to be there but not be present, not only does the Lord know that, but my wife picks up on it too, because we've been together for so long, she can see through it. And the kids know too. You know, the kids are aware of a lot more than we give them credit for.
No doubt. Yeah, that it's really interesting, because like if I'm at work for 3 days, I don't get to choose where I want to go, what I want to do. And the duties are, we're told, you got to go pick up this homeless guy covered in feces. There's no one else coming. It's up to us. That's us. That's our thing. And I think if you do 3 days of that and you get forced to get up at night when you don't want to, when you come home, you know, like, you know, the home is the castle. You want to rest. You want to do the things that you want to do. I want to go to the Home Depot when I want to go to. I want to do these tasks on my time, on my thing. And it becomes kind of a selfish thing, because I've known myself getting frustrated when I can't do those things that I have built in my head, that checklist of things to do, and I start can't doing them. I start getting frustrated, right? And then all of a sudden, boom, we're arguing, right? And so I think one of the things that we have to be better at is communicating with the spouse of things that you have to do at home when you have those days, because there is a compressed time window, right? And so I'll put off something forever, and then I'll only have one middle day to get something done. But I haven't communicated to that forever. It's just been sitting in my head for a month, driving me nuts. And then finally I said, I have to rip out this tree today. And she's like, that thing's been sitting there for a year, you know? But I think that the way we get about that is if I can text her, call her and say, what do you got going tomorrow? This is what I have to do. What do you think? Yeah, and I think that goes so much better, right? Because then, you know what I mean? She's on the same page. She knows you got to rip out the tree or whatever it is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Heather has gotten into this habit recently that is right in that alley where she'll ask me, she doesn't really ask me anymore what I want to do that day. She asks me, what do you have to do today?
Oh.
And then we can build the day around those things. So, you know, today we had that conversation, and my two things on the list were, I've got to do my lunges and I have to record a podcast. And other than that, I don't have any other things I have to do. And then usually if I'm paying attention and, you know, being smart, then I ask her the same question. What do you have to do today? And then we can have a conversation after that. Like, okay, well, what do you want to do for the rest of the day? How are we going to build that around those things? And it tends to work, but I am like you, where I'll have these things in the back of my head that have been kind of nagging me. And then, you know, randomly, then you just figure, oh, you know what? I got a second. They start working on that, and then it derails other plans. But the communication aspect, like you're highlighting, that's the key right there, is to have those things communicated.
It's funny how we start learning each other, but I think my wife has done a great job of learning me and know that I'm like a terrorist at the end of the day if I haven't gotten like a workout in or a strength or something, right? And so we know, you know, we talked with Jeremy Stolnecker about like some of those non-negotiables.
Yes.
And she knows now that like I'll wake up, we help with the kids. If I'm home, we take them to school. But like at 8 o'clock, I'm going to do my thing. And it's not, we're not going to go to breakfast right now. We're not going to do, you know, I'm not going to go clean the toilets. Like I need to get that in. And then she knows that it gets the demon out of me. I'm a much better present person. And so I think over, you know, almost 20 years of being together, we're starting to realize that that's my thing in the morning. And then I have to be conscious of what her things are. You know what I mean? And it's really funny because usually I'm done with my workout. I'm like, all right, now it's our time, right? And she's like, no, I got to go shop. I got to go to Target. I got to go get the things for the house. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm ready. She's like, well, now it's my time, you know? So I think trying to figure out, literally getting the calendar done, talking about what do you have to do and what do I have to do, it's got to be huge for like basic communication of marriage.
And we all have those days too where the whole plan gets derailed. So we had 3 days this week where we had to go down the hill. So I live on the mountain, so we got to go down the hill to do anything, whether it's going to the dentist, getting a haircut, going to Target. We got to go down the hill. So it's a whole production because you got to drive and you end up being down there for a few hours. So it eats a huge chunk out of the day. So you do have days like that where everything kind of gets derailed. And when you have something on the calendar that you got to do every day, like a 400 meter lunge, that gets real problematic because I'm at home. I'm not getting up early and knocking those out. I'm just not. I'm not Jocko Willink. Could I do that physically? Yeah, but I don't. So then literally this last week for 3 days in a row, Heather and I are down the hill doing things that are important, have to be done. And so now we're coming back and we're getting our lunges in at night in the dark because you got to do them, but it's all you have. So you do have those days where despite your best efforts at planning and structuring, it's not going to work. But as long as you're on board with that together, you can still accomplish the things you got to get done. You just might have to lunge in the dark in the woods with the owls hooting and stuff. It's cool. It's good.
Sounds rad. Yeah,
it's not. It's not rad.
So how do we be more conscious of our motivations versus duties?
Okay, well, this is just for me personally, but I was doing a little bit of research on this whole idea, and this verse came up, and I think this is applicable for me right now. This is Jeremiah 17, verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind. Mm. I think for me, what I need to realize, because I do fall into the trap of not realizing what my motivations are in that moment and then doing things that are good, but for the wrong reasons. I think I need to really take a step back and realize that I have a heart that is deceitful above all things. And I need to be more cognizant of that, more aware of that, and more intentional of pausing and allowing myself to have that moment of reflection to really think about it and go, okay, what am I doing right now? So for me, that means I have to slow down and I have to recognize that I'm not the best guy around. Like, I've got a wicked and deceitful heart. It says so in the word, which I believe. And I do know that when I reflect on myself, I do know that that is at my core. I'm a sinner. And so I do have bad motivations. I make mistakes. I do those things. But I think a lot of times, probably most of us are able to go through life thinking, well, I'm a good person. You know, I got good motivations. I'm just doing the dishes. Like, that's a good thing. But we have to look deeper and really realize, hold on, at least for me, this is for me personally, this is real world for me right now. My motivations are not always good. And I have to recognize that. And beyond just saying it on a podcast, I've got to be able to learn how to pause and either adjust my motivations or just stop what I'm doing and then go do the other thing that I know I should be doing, whether that's playing with Indy or sitting down on the couch to read the word or just listen to my wife talk about her day, whatever that is.
That's solid. I have a really good friend that says, you know, when he talks about marriage, his number one piece of advice is do not vocalize your first thought.
Yeah.
Because it's usually wrong. And it's like my first thought usually when she says something is, what the hell are you talking about? You know, and that never goes well, right? But I think, you know, when it comes to motivation, knowing that most of my thoughts are wrong, you know what I mean? And that I'm a failed human being, is that acting on that first thought as well, you know, is not only vocalizing it, but acting on it. Cause I'm like, I should do this. Well, maybe take a tactical pause, take a deep breath, think about it and see what your real motivation is. Are you trying to avoid something or is this something that actually has to get done? You know, you talked about, you never wanted to clean the toilets. It sounded ridiculous to me when I first got on the job, but I didn't know like fire service culture, you know? And one of the guys, I was on probation up in the desert. There's some great guys up there. And he came up to me and he goes, I want you to flip the script on this. This isn't a chore. This isn't, he's like, you need to start taking pride in this because you earned this toilet. These are yours. You know what I mean? Like there's thousands of people that want this position and they would die to come get this, you know? And so, but these are yours. You earned this. So like take pride in it. Do these things with joy because you are going to work your way up the totem pole. But right now, this is yours and own this job, own this toilet, own this thing and take pride in it. And I think, you know, I think we do that. You know what I mean? And it's what's interesting, though, is if I'm honest, I don't do that as much at home. And that's my home. Right. But I do way more cleaning, way more prideful, like, you know, dutiful work at work than I do at home. I think I tend to defer that to her. Because she doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, that's your gig. I go out and get the bacon. But I don't think that's right. You know, I think I should take just as much pride in my own home than I do at work.
That kind of goes way back to, I don't even know. It might have been episode what is now episode one with my dad talking about his dad and that advice that his dad gave him on, you know, you're coming home from work and you dressed up nice and you put on cologne to go to work and you went and gave your best at work. And then you come home and you're all disheveled and tired and grumpy. And he's like, you're giving your best to people that do not really matter as much or sometimes even at all compared to your family. And I think that's that kind of that same dichotomy. You got much better advice than I did, because my advice that I got was, hey kid, you know, you don't even have to clean the toilets in the morning. All you have to do is spray some toilet bowl cleaner in there and leave it sit in there. And then people think you cleaned it because there's toilet bowl cleaner in the water when they go to use the restroom. What? That's the advice I got.
That's hilarious. No, mine, and it kind of hit home with me. It made sense to me. Like, this is my mop. That's, everyone expects, you know, like, I earned it. I worked hard to get the career. I worked hard to get this job. I live at this station 50% of the month. That's my mop. That's nobody else's. It's not the engineers. It's not the captains. That's mine. He's like, so hide that mop, you know, take pride in that thing. And that did hit home, but I don't know if I could tell you where the mop is in my house, you know, so, which is horrible because I know exactly where it's hanging at the station and I know we use it on the daily.
Okay. So this, as you're talking about it, made me think immediately of Colossians 3, which I did have to look up because I didn't know where it was. But this is the verse, Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men.
Mm.
I was reading something a while back and it was talking about this idea that God made all of us and we all have a different set of skills. We all have different personalities and we all end up on different paths. So some of us are firemen. Some of us are UPS drivers. Some of us are in special operations in the military. Some of us are pastors, right? We're all doing different things. And in our society, some of those jobs seem less important than others, right? I mean, that's just unavoidable. We would look at certain jobs just culturally and say, well, you know, yeah, that's great, but that's like a stepping stone job or whatever. But God doesn't look at it that way. Because he's looking at your heart and your motivations. He wants to see that you have the attitude that you're talking about when you're cleaning the toilet, that you're doing it really in the end, essentially for him. And I'm going to clean this toilet the best I can because this is the task that I've been given right now. And it doesn't matter if nobody else ever knows. It doesn't matter if people think I just squirted toilet bowl cleaner in here, because God knows I actually scrubbed the outside and I got around the back. And I didn't tell anybody, but I did that because this is my task. This is what God's given me to do right now. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And that's kind of a difficult concept, especially in the silly example we're using. We're talking a lot about toilets in this episode.
Yeah, toilets are a thing.
I apologize for that, but it's the real world. But really, I mean, if you believe in this stuff, that's accurate. And we know from our own personal experience that those types of things, whether it be making your bed, cleaning the bathroom, vacuuming, those types of things then translate into larger things in life later on down the road, more impactful, more important things. And we do have to be diligent and good with the small stuff we're given in order to be trusted with the big stuff.
Yes. And I think that's a way to build integrity, right? Because what integrity is the thing that you're doing when no one else is watching, right? And so if you're doing those things joyfully, if you're doing them correct, if you're doing them thoroughly, right? Well, nobody else will really know. If somebody's going to walk in 5 minutes later and flush that toilet and they never know you cleaned it, right? But you did. You know that. You know you did what you're supposed to do. And I think that gives you a little bit of self-confidence, a little bit of, you know, thing to go into the next task and with purpose and with drive. And so I do think that we're building integrity by, like you talk about, doing the little things, the little tasks over and over and building up those habits. And that becomes part of your life, right? You know, I was thinking about this while we were talking, and it says, trying to find out what some of the ways, you know, we overcome that power struggle when we come back. I can't imagine what it's like if you were deployed in the military and you're gone from 6 months to a year and come back and try to reintegrate. Because everything I've read and some of the couples counseling that we've had say that men should take a leadership role in the family, and we should have a leadership role as the big things in life, as where we're going to live and what church we go to and where the kids go to school and like some of those big things. But I can't imagine coming, reintegrating into life and trying to regain that role. But one of, I think it was Max Case, one of our coaches, was talking about saying, instead of just saying, this is what we're going to do, is communicate to her. And the important question is, what do you think? And so I can have an idea on saying something, but I'll talk to my wife and say, what do you think about this? And having her get some buy-in, and then there's some give and take back and forth, and then you communicate and collectively come up with the best solution for whatever it is. And I think that's important, because at work, we don't really say, hey, Noel, what do you think? We should, you know, we just do, right? We just do it, right? And that doesn't work at home.
That's a good solid point. And then having the confidence to lead if they don't have a thought or an opinion, because sometimes that happens too. Like, oh, whatever you want to do. And then now it's time. Okay. All right. Well, then we're going to do this, instead of being like, no, I need your feedback, and trying to force that. I only say that because it's something that I do to Heather. When I ask her opinion on something that we're talking about, she'll sometimes not have an opinion, which is totally fine. But I'll be like, hold on, I need some feedback. Like, what? We got to make the decision together. And she'll be like, no, I'll just, whatever you think is best. And that's the point where I need to say, okay, it's time to be the man of the house now. And all right, well, we're going to do this then. Thank you for coming along with me.
It's the age old, you know, problem in marriage when you say, what do you want for dinner? I don't know, whatever you want. And we're like, all right, cool. Let's go to Chick-fil-A. I don't want that. I love that. I don't know if it's a comedian or I saw it on YouTube or something, but the guy was like, the best way around that is you ask your wife, you say, hey, guess where we're going tonight for dinner? And she's like, sushi? And you're like, yep. But you have no idea. So wherever she guesses, that's where you go. And it just completely disintegrates that whole debate.
I tricked you. That's great. Let's recap the Fire Up program, because we just had class three.
Dude. Man, God is moving in this thing. I am so grateful to be a part of it. And it's really cool. I mean, it takes a lot of work on our end, and it takes... But man, when people show up to that thing and we do it, it's now become part of my program, like part of my mental, spiritual, physical health thing. I look forward to it now, and I don't know how I would, you know, run life without it, if that makes sense at all. But we had some great guys come in. We had, you know, Santi flew in from Reno Fire Department. We had guys coming in from Minnesota. We had, who else? We had repeat guys. So it's just amazing. And I think, to me, the whole power of it is the collective group talking about what we can do to improve each other. And then we do some great stuff together. There's so much camaraderie. I'm so glad we did it.
Yeah, it was really impactful for me again this time, like it always has been. And just like you, I'm super proud to be a part of this team. I think one of my favorite things that kind of became a realization that I hadn't thought of before this class, but I kind of, through a conversation we were having about coffee, of all things, I realized that our program is different from other programs that I've been a part of, whether it be training in the military, even Mighty Oaks, other stuff like that, in that as cadre members, we actually are participating with the guys coming out to the program in everything. So there's not really as much of a separation of, hey, we're the cadre and you guys are the, you know, the class members or the attendees or whatever. We don't really have a word for them, program guys at the end. But I love that about it. I love it for me personally, because I'm also experiencing it and I'm getting a lot of good stuff out of it too. And I think that that shared aspect of it is really cool and has been very positive. And it's just one of many things, but you're absolutely right. God is moving in it and it's been really cool. I think it's about to start growing fairly rapidly.
Yeah. The next class is growing big.
Yeah.
You know what I thought was really very cool? Is we had Hugo Catalan, which works for UFLAC. He's a clinical therapist, and he's currently getting his PhD in therapy. And what we've done is just shared our own experiences with mental health, with physical health, spiritual health, and threw it together in a curriculum, in a program, and said, this is what works best for the five of us. But what was amazing is in talking to him, he was very positive, had some great feedback on saying that this is something that's well needed. And so it was really cool for me. It was encouraging to say that from a professional standpoint, this is something that he would refer people to, and he would do it again. And man, mad respect to Hugo. He did everything that we did. And he's not a fireman. He came up and got an ice bath, cut line. He did all the workouts. But that was really encouraging to know that we're on the right path, and to know that age, this is not, we're just not weirdos and we only like these things, but other people could benefit as well.
It was super huge. It was really good to meet him. And it was very humbling that he would even come and then give us the feedback that he did. It was very positive. I'm going to ask for your help right now as a podcast listener. We're building this thing out, and Kevin did all the legwork to make it into an actual official nonprofit. Our cost right now for the guys to come to this program is $200. And what that covers is their food and their lodging for the location that we do it at. We have to pay for where we sleep and the facilities we use. And that's it. We're not making any money off the thing. We're just trying to cover costs. We are looking to expand. We're looking to do other things to provide more equipment, more resources, that kind of stuff. And then potentially we would love to be able to just provide for guys to come and not have to pay anything. But in order to do that, we need donations. So if this program is something that you like the sound of, and we've talked about it a lot, of course we want you to come out. But if you're not able to, or it's just not something that you think is for you, you can donate to our program, and we will use that money to fund future classes, to bring other guys on board that want to come out and to continue to do this work, which I feel really passionate about. So there's a link in the show notes, like always, to the Fire Up Program website where you can donate. And man, even if it's just a couple of bucks, we appreciate every little bit we can get. And it goes all toward the program, all toward the guys.
Yeah, and we're a legit nonprofit 501(c), so you should be able to write off that donation that you sent to us. And just know that it goes to a great cause. We're going to start sending out testimonials and stuff, but I don't think there's a person that came that said it didn't impact their life in some way, including my own. And so it's really impactful, and I think it's really well needed. We're so far behind the first responder community that I think we are in the military with PTS and some of the mental health struggles. And this is a stepping stone to just identify some things that we're struggling with. How can we improve in our faith, our family, our fitness, and it's an amazing starting point. It's really hard to explain some of the magic that happens up there, but just know that, your dollars will go spent well if you choose to donate, and we're humbled by your support.
And our next class, as I'm sure you're aware, is December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. It's up in Crestline, which is in the mountains above San Bernardino. It's going to be a crisp, beautiful class. You should come out.
Yes. And I say, if you are interested, now is the time. This is a weekend class, which we don't have often, and it's filling up. So I think probably by the beginning part of November, we might be full. So if you're thinking about it, get off the fence and sign up, because I think the space is going to be limited. This has been the Fire You Carry podcast.
I shouldn't be drinking sparkling water while I record this podcast. It's driving me crazy.
Podcasting 101, right?
I think I remember reading that somewhere.
This has been the Fire You Carry.
Do it again.
This has been the Fire You Carry podcast.
I'm not Jocko Willink.